How are you all doing this morning? Good, good. Welcome to the last Sunday of winter. Yeah, we should get some applause on that. If you're doing good this morning, you're doing a lot better than a fellow I heard about this week. He's a husband sitting in the driver's seat of his car, and he looks over at his wife, and he's got this very meek look on his face, and she has this absolute disgusted and horrified look on her face. And what you need to know is their car at this point is teetering on the edge of a cliff. Husband looks at his wife and goes, "You know, honey," says in a very timid voice, "there's got to be a lesson in this somewhere." "Oh yeah, there's a lesson in there." And the lesson is this: if you want to get to a certain destination, you have to take the right path, right? Anybody who's taken the wrong turn and gotten lost, you know the significance of choosing the right path. There's one way to get there. It might be various routes, but some paths are absolutely dangerous and treacherous. And that's what this husband had to learn, that there was a right path and a wrong path. Well, that's kind of the premise of this whole book that we are into this week, the book of Proverbs. And this was written predominantly by Solomon. He's not the only one, but it was, in every case, written by an elder, an older man, to pass on wisdom, to talk about the path of wisdom to the younger generation, to pass on. And today we're going to explore some of the main themes that overarch the entire book of Proverbs, because this book has a lot of practical things. You'll see Proverbs ripped out and put on coffee mugs or bumper stickers or t-shirts, and it's been marked as one of those books that's really good for daily devotions because of that, you know, it's highly applicable to our everyday lives. Today we're going to look at some of the recurring themes, and towards the end of the series we're going to look at how it applies to our daily lives and integrates some of the deeper themes of this book that quite often are obscured because it's so pragmatic. We see the pragmatic side of it and we miss the deeper beauty of wisdom in this book. So today we are looking at major themes, and there are going to be four of them. If you've got one of the flyers, the handouts, the bulletins, whatever you want to call those little pamphlets, on the back of that, we have an outline, and this is going to be really simple, really easy for all of us. We're going to talk about the four major themes that we see in Proverbs. We're going to see the pursuit of wisdom, the protection of wisdom, the price of wisdom, and the process of wisdom. And there's always going to be a contrast between wisdom and foolishness. So we're going to be looking at those major themes, beginning with that very first theme, the pursuit of wisdom. And this is the theme of chapter 1 that we talked about last week. So we're not going to really dive in with this first point, but if you want to, you can open up to Proverbs chapter 2. That's where we're going to be today. Proverbs chapter 2. We're going to be going 2, 3, and 4, and dabbling in chapter 6. We'll get back into 5 and 6 next time we're in this book. But we're talking about the pursuit of wisdom, and this is one of the most important themes of Proverbs. This is our primary focus last week, that when we are pursuing wisdom, it protects us. It foolproofs our life. Now, it's interesting, though, that throughout this book, the writer talks about wisdom as a pursuit, something that you're chasing after, something that you're looking for. Now, wisdom does call out, but you have to follow it. It calls out to everyone. The wise listen and will follow wisdom. Wisdom is a pursuit. Foolishness pursues you. Throughout the book, he talks about foolishness just coming to you. When was the last time you had to seek out bad advice? Ever? No, it just comes to you, right? Or bad information, fake news. It just comes. Foolishness comes naturally. Foolishness pursues you. But we have to ask, it kind of works like this. If you're not pursuing fitness, you'll soon find yourself pursued by fatness, right? If you are not doing things to actively keep yourself fit, you are actively keeping yourself, well, for some, I put my foot in my mouth here. I understand for some it's a medical condition, all right? But naturally, it comes to us, right? I've got to be careful with that. I get my spare tire if I'm stressed out and I start stress eating. Chocolate is my best friend and my worst enemy. We've got to be pursuing wisdom in the same way. Naturally, we are going to come to a place that we are not mentally or emotionally or spiritually fit unless we are pursuing wisdom. So what is wisdom? All right, there's going to be three major words that seem to be synonymous. They're not. Knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. These three things are distinct. Knowledge is information. Knowledge is information. This is bits of data. This is the data and information that the curling iron gets hot. It's also the information that the curling iron has a red dot. Two different bits of information. That is knowledge. Understanding is putting things together. Integration. It's knowing that when the red light is on, the curling iron is probably hot, right? That is understanding, putting knowledge together. So what is wisdom? Well, if you've got information and integration, now you've got application. Wisdom is putting that together in a way that makes sense. It is looking at the curling iron, seeing the red light on, and knowing that is a really bad time to use it for bathroom karaoke. I know whereof I speak. That's wisdom, knowing we don't use it for that purpose at that time. Any other time, whatever, as long as your wife doesn't catch you, right? She's at home watching, so she knows what I'm doing now. That's the pursuit of wisdom, but then there's also the protection of wisdom. And this is where we dive in chapter 2. Chapter 2 celebrates the moral guidance of wisdom. We see how wisdom will lead us to fear the Lord and let us know righteousness and justice and equity in every good path. Starting in verse 6, it says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding." Number one, the protection doesn't start with just wisdom itself. It's who is the source of that wisdom. God. The one we just said, saying that we are going to see a victory in his name. That's where wisdom comes from. God. That's why wisdom brings us protection. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. And just so you understand there, the word saint there is not like Saint Francis or Saint Matthew. No. If you are a believer in Jesus Christ, you are a saint. It is a set apart one. And he is watching over you. He is guiding your steps. And the guidance of God is what we know as wisdom. It's having the information. It's putting it all together and understanding there's a threat here. Then you will understand righteousness and equity and every good path. Here's where we see some of the contrast. Every good path. See, wisdom protects us. It shows us the way of wellness for our soul. Wisdom shows us the way of wellness for our soul, but foolishness is dangerous. It goes for any path that looks good. It goes for whatever seems good in that moment. See, wisdom is there shouting, "Man, last time you did this, you got this result. Are you going to do it again?" I mean, that's what Benjamin Franklin's definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. That's foolishness. It's saying, this is a promise that's too good to be true. This is wisdom stepping in and saying, "They're asking you to do something unethical. You know that doesn't pay off in the long run." Wisdom protects. Sure, you might get away with it for a short time, but God's the one that sees. Wisdom protects. Sure, you'll get a little bit of joy from that thing right now, but in the long run, it's going to hurt you more than you can imagine. Wisdom protects. The protection of wisdom throughout this book is a major theme. As the old saying goes, fools charge in where angels dare not tread, right? A wise person knows when to be cautious. A fool fears nothing, or even worse, he fears the wrong thing. Christian, might I encourage you to fear more that the people of God would respond poorly to our current circumstances than to fear our current circumstances? We're all concerned with what's going on politically. I'm more concerned with what I am seeing Christians responding to. I'm delighted with what I'm seeing some Christians do. It is fantastic to see Christians that say, yes, we disagree with certain policies. And since it does not submit to the law of the land, we submit to the law of the land first and foremost. We're going to hold certain people accountable. But I also see in Christianity this bitterness and anger towards fallen human beings. You understand something. That if their Lord is not the Lord, you can't expect them to act like it. That's wisdom. First and foremost, they need Christ. That's wisdom. See, this whole thing of wisdom protecting, this whole thing of foolishness charging in where there is danger, it's never more significant than our relationship with God. It is never more significant than in that relationship. This book opens with the phrase, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge," and it closes with applauding the woman who fears God. The fear of God, the relationship with God, is elemental key to wisdom. Everything in between those bookends reminds us over and over that we do what is right, not because it benefits me, not because it benefits anyone else, but because there is a God who is sovereign over all, and He is watching everything we do. And He is in control, and we're going to see a victory because He won it. I want you to understand that. Wisdom tells us that no matter how bad it looks, God has already won the victory. Why are we afraid? Why should I fear? Oh, okay. They take some things from us. Look, I don't think you understand. That means we get even more in heaven. Jesus promised everything that we lose in this life, we're going to get back 100-fold in the kingdom to come. What are you afraid of, Christians? That's wisdom. In the movie Rudy, young Daniel Rudiger is talking to the former president of Notre Dame, Friar John Kavanaugh. Rudy complains that he sees his dreams of playing for Notre Dame dying. It's just not happening. And he asks him, have I done everything that I could? Is there anything you can do to help? And Kavanaugh responds to him, and he says, "Son, in years of religious studies, I've come up with only two hard, incontrovertible facts. There is a God, and I'm not Him." Friends, that's wisdom. That's fearing God and recognizing Him. Our relationship with God is elemental here. In chapter 3, recounts the benefits that wisdom can bestow on us. Especially in verses 5 and 6, we find a promise that we as God's people have clung to every time we have come to a difficult circumstance. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make straight your paths." That phrase there, "make straight your paths," isn't He's going to give you a straight line to walk on. It actually means He will smooth out that path. We were on the border of South Carolina and Georgia, covering the 40 most treacherous miles of the Appalachian Trail. And after about 8 miles, your legs, with 80 pounds on your back, by the way, your legs start going, "We aren't going to work anymore." And we actually had a system so that, you come to a rock in the middle of a path, at the beginning of the day, you can step over it. At the end of the day, you drag your foot around it, and you're weak. But you might not even be looking at it. And we would have people tumbling over. And there, if you fall, you're not going to stop for another couple hundred feet, if you get my drift. So we'd have this system. We would shout out to each other, "Root right, rock on the left." And we would be on the lookout for those things. Whoever was in the lead had to let everybody else know. Now imagine if we had someone up front taking those things out of the way, smoothing the path. That's what this is talking about. God using wisdom to make it smooth for you. Not that it's going to be easier, but you will avoid those obstacles that will put you into a pitfall. That is God using wisdom. And this promise has never failed us. Whenever we have obeyed the conditions God has laid down between verses 1 and 12 of chapter 3, of learning God's truth, obeying His will, sharing His blessings, and submitting to His discipline, this promise has never failed us. In fact, this is not a call to turn off our brains, by the way. Because a lot of times we take this, oh, don't lean on your own understanding, as in your own understanding is of no value. No, no, no. It means that's not your main support in life. Wisdom is trusting God. In fact, we are told later on in verse 23 that wisdom will keep us safe. He says, then you will walk in your way securely, and your foot will not stumble, and we will sleep sweetly because we will not be afraid. He says, if you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Don't be afraid of sudden terror or of the ruin of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. Look, living wisely helps us avoid many sources of anxiety in this world. Let me clue you in. If it's something that's making you anxious and you just keep it to yourself, that's foolishness. What has worry done for anybody other than give them heartburn? But when we trust God to handle it, when we know that He is in control, just as He always has been, when we know that He is working out His plan, we no longer are anxious or need to be. Anybody else know what's coming up this week other than spring supposedly starting? Somebody needs to let the weather guy know that that's happening, but anybody else know what's going on this week? Yeah, St. Patrick's Day. And he is known for bringing the gospel to what nation?
Ireland.
Viva Ireland. All right. St. Patrick, when he first came, he was actually a Scot, which my lineage, so I claim him, you know, he's my peeps. He took the gospel as a slave to the Druids and the tribal chiefs that were warring with each other in Ireland. And he stood against them, confronting them with the gospel, and constantly had threats of armies coming against him. And the Irish tribes would be fighting against each other, and sometimes the only way that they could even get to sleep at night was when they would get drunk, which is ironic when you consider how we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. He didn't want that for their nation. He wanted deliverance from that. And he would be in the face of danger constantly. I mean, things that you and I would shiver to think of. People that can threaten to take your life and can actually do it. How would you sleep? It was actually noticed by the Irish peoples that St. Patrick slept more soundly than any drunk man ever did. Why? Because he knew someone greater than any tribal chief, president, or king was on his side. God. He had no fear. He needed fear no one but God. He was protected by wisdom. Wisdom delivers us from fear of anything but God. Christian, do you realize how freeing this is? Let me speak to you today, if you're watching online, if you're here, and you don't know the fear of God, you don't know that relationship with God. Look, you can be freed from what is plaguing you, what is causing you to fear, what is causing you anxiety, simply by recognizing one thing: there's a God and you're not Him. That fact alone puts Him in the driver's seat and you can trust Him. He knows the right way to go. He's not going to take you off a cliff. There's no lessons for Him to learn. He made the pathway. He'll take you to safety. Wisdom delivers us from fear of anything but God. We have the pursuit of wisdom, the protection of wisdom. But I must be honest, there is also the price of wisdom. The price of wisdom. And we find this in chapter 4, where it continues extolling wisdom and its virtues while charging us to pursue and hold on to wisdom at all costs. In verse 7, it says this: the beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. And whatever you get insight. It's using words of get. That's a word for purchase. Buy it. Sacrifice what you must to have it, but pursue wisdom. Get wisdom. In other words, wisdom is of supreme worth. It has a beginning here, and that's the desire for it, that it's worth the price. Wisdom comes first in value and time. Wisdom does have its price, but so does everything that brings such benefits. C- Because here's what's going to happen. You're going to start to pursue wisdom, maybe, after this. That's my hope. But then you're going to come to the point that it actually costs you something. It's going to cost you a relationship. It's going to cost you a habit. It's going to cost you a way of life. It's going to cost you a job. And you're going to go, no, that's not worth it to me. Wisdom says I should do this, but it's not worth it. That's a price too high. Look, for wisdom, there is no price too high. See, some people know the price of everything, but the value of nothing. So we make foolish decisions. We buy that jacket off of Amazon, assuming it's going to be just great because it's cheaper. And then we realize it's because it's a knockoff and it doesn't even fit right. That small is actually a triple extra large. It was made small for another country. It just doesn't work right. That's foolishness. Wisdom recognizes the value that you get what you pay for. See, wisdom is costly, but it pays off in the end. Significantly more than it ever cost you. Wisdom is costly, but it pays off in the end. Foolishness, here's the contrast. Foolishness is cheap, and you get what you pay for. Foolishness costs you nothing to choose it, but it costs you everything if once it's been chosen. Wisdom, there's an entry fee, but it'll pay off in the end. It's well worth it. And we see this theme repeated throughout the rest of the book. Later, we're actually told to purchase truth, wisdom, and instruction, and insight, all those things that we talked about earlier in Proverbs 23, 23. And the author says it in many ways, but the point is always the same. Wisdom is the most important thing we could invest our resources in. We have to invest in learning. And look, you're going to invest in learning one way or the other. Either you pay up front and you get the lesson in preparation, or you pay after you learn the lesson the hard way. You know, according to the Federal Reserve Bureau, as of last year, Americans, we have $1.9 trillion in student debt. Just so you know, there's a big old hoopla about $1.9 trillion going around right now, and this is $1.7 in student debt every year. That's enough that every American citizen would owe $5,000 for student debt. But we value education. We're willing to pay for it. At least we're willing to pay for the degree. Whether we're paying money for classes or investing time in our studies, we have to be certain we are spending what we have on wisdom. And when we do, we will reap the reward of wise living. 4:8-9 says this, prize her highly, that's wisdom, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland, that's the victor's garland. She will bestow you with a beautiful crown. It wasn't just kings that wore crowns, it was anybody that was wealthy, they would wear it as this accent piece to say, I have money. And wisdom goes, you have something far more precious than that. Any fool with a shovel and time can eventually find gold, right? But it takes a person with wisdom to gain wisdom, because we have to listen for it. So not only are we supposed to invest in wisdom, now once we have the investment, we need to protect it. In verses 13 through 15, it says this, keep hold of instruction, don't let her go, guard her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and don't walk in the way of the evil. Avoid it. Don't go on it. Turn away from it and pass on. Okay, we have here in two verses, six different ways of saying, don't go there. It's dangerous. It's going to rob you of wisdom. It's going to lead you astray. It's going to lead you in the way of foolishness once again. This word for turn, it occurs here in Proverbs, only here and in chapter 7, when the son is advised to turn from the ways of the adulteress. Here the son is told to avoid the path of the wicked and go on your own way. That's the way of wisdom. See, too many people don't value their education. You've learned something in life, right? Every single one of you has wisdom. Otherwise, you wouldn't have survived this long. You have something. And the very fact that you're here means you're pursuing wisdom to some extent. Valuing that wisdom. Valuing that education. But far too many people, we don't value our education as we should. You know, there was a time that college campuses were a place that was highly esteemed for value, where every extracurricular activity was kind of the side thing, a minor thing. But now, what is it? What are college campuses known for, my college students? Sorority, fraternity parties, keggers. Nothing wrong with partying, at least most parties. Some parties. Okay, a few. But we have so cheapened the accumulated asset of wisdom that it has become completely disregarded in the very places it should be found. Might I say that it's also true in church? That we're here to feel good, we're here to sing a few songs and get some catchphrases, instead of actually learning the way life is supposed to be. And we'll go back to that curling iron and try to sing karaoke the next day. Not realizing, oh yeah, wisdom says shouldn't do that. I do it too, by the way. This is not me pointing fingers at you. This is all of us. We don't value our education. There's nothing wrong with enjoying life, but there's also something significantly wrong when we learn nothing from it. We need to make wisdom more important than anything else that we accumulate in life. When we don't do that, we waste the investment that we've made in life. We must fall in love with wisdom. We must put these teachings in our heart, we're told in verse 21 of chapter 4. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart. And then once they're there, we have to guard our heart. In verse 23, it says, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. To make sure no one convinces you to abandon wisdom. Throughout the rest of the chapter in the book, the author gives us some tools we can use to guard wisdom. So here's some tools, and they're all questions. What is filling my ears? What we listen to will someday influence my heart and my mind. Usually it influences your mind first, and then it trickles down to your heart. And what changes your heart will change the way you behave on the outside. So what is filling your ears? Then what's in your heart? That's the next step, from your ears to your heart. Whatever the heart loves, the ears will hear and the eyes will see. Just ask my kids. Whenever we drive through a town, the first thing they're looking for is that big old Burger King sign. Why? Because they love the nuggets. They love them. Meanwhile, I'm looking for the bookstore. Because we love it. What our heart loves, our ears and our eyes will hear and see. What's in your mouth? Whatever's in the heart will ultimately come out the mouth. This is the portal to hear what's in someone's heart. What's in front of my eyes? Outlook determines outcome. Outlook determines outcome. Whatever you are looking at will determine where you go. Anybody who has ridden bike any amount knows this. Wherever your eyes go, that's where the bike eventually goes. You might not even think that you're turning the handlebars, but you do, naturally. Abraham, why did he get counted as a friend of God? Because he looked for a city whose builder and maker is God. He walked by faith. He kept his eyes on God, even when it seemed that it was totally wrong. Not that he didn't make any mistakes. He made a few foolish mistakes in his life, didn't he? Sarah, tell him you're my sister. Foolish mistakes. Hagar and Ishmael, foolish mistake. But he was still counted a friend of God. God still used him. Why? Because it was a lifetime pattern of keeping his eyes focused on God. What's in front of my eyes? And then what's at the end of my path? What is the end result of a life? Sometimes we come to the decision between foolishness and wisdom, and we're not sure which one to choose. Well, consider the outcome of that path. What's at the end of it? People that choose that again and again and again. How has it been proven? Does it deliver on what it promises or not? Okay, every person that buys a Ford expects a car that's going to last them forever. Anybody that owns a Ford is looking for another vehicle. Okay, there are some people that don't. But maybe, just maybe, That would be an indicator to the rest of the way of life. Think about this. If all life is, as some people would say, to enjoy it the most, okay, where does that land people? Every person that has pursued pleasure has found themselves left destitute, alone, and suffering. Every single one of them. Maybe, just maybe, we'll listen to the voice of wisdom here. What is the end of that path? Before, on his last day, drinking hemlock, Socrates said this: the unexamined life is not worth living. The Christian version of that is what Paul said in 2 Corinthians 13:5. He said, examine yourselves to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. What is at the end of your path? The life you are now living, the day-to-day choices you are making, are they made in the foolishness of the here and now, or are they made in the wisdom of what is yet to come? What is at the end of your path? What's filling your ears? What's in your heart? What's in your mouth? What's in front of your eyes? And what's at the end of your path? Finally, we see this theme of not only the pursuit of wisdom, the protection of wisdom, and the price of wisdom, we also see the process of wisdom. Now we've come full circle back to the pursuit again. But this theme hits us with the fact that wisdom takes hard work. Wisdom takes hard work. And we see this in chapter 6. In verse 6 it says, go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in the harvest. Here's the contrast for this one. Wisdom takes hard work. So does building anything. But foolishness is easy. So is falling. How long does it take to build a structure in comparison to how long it takes to demolish it? Those of you that were here, how long did it take us to build this building? Anyone? Months and months and months. Too long, right? How long would it take for us to destroy it? A few hours. Well, yeah, it depends on what you use, but just with some fuel and a match, you could do it pretty quickly. Now, we have suppression systems in here, okay? So don't worry about that. But if we decided to destroy it, it could go pretty quickly, right? Wisdom takes time to build. It takes a lifetime to build. And you're building it throughout your days. Whereas foolishness, one choice, one decision. Foolishness is easy. Now, we might find it frustrating to read or study this book, let alone teach or preach from it. Trust me. It sometimes seems easier to draw memorable quotes from it and let it stay at that. To just draw out a few proverbs that we think, yep, this one works for me. I'm going to choose this one as my life verse. But rather, we can't just let it go with that. We are a society caught up in catchphrases, tweetable quotes, and hashtags. We'd rather have something short and memorable. Even wisdom, so-called, is presented in sentimental life lessons or a management pep talk, rather than digging in and hearing wisdom calling to us from every line of this book. Real wisdom that observes how life's work and goes on to ask why, that ultimate question, that's hard to come by. It is so rare. If we're going to find that in the bookstore, where would you look? Wisdom like that. Is that going to be right up front? No. You're going to find the self-help books, the really quick ones. Weight loss for idiots. Stuff like that. You're going to find the romance novels. You're going to find the biggest political craze book up front. But that true wisdom of understanding why the world works the way that it does, why life is the way that it is, what we should do in response to all that, that sort of wisdom, you're going to have to dig in the back of that bookstore if it's even going to be there. Because it's going to deal with God. It's going to dig into Him. No. It's not going to be popular. But obtaining spiritual wisdom isn't a once-a-week hobby. Look, you're here because you're searching for something. That's great. Even if you're here just because you're part of something here, you're searching for something. Even if somebody dragged you in here, kicking and screaming, and you just want them off your back, you're seeking peace there. Look, You're not going to get what you're looking for from a once-a-week habit. Wisdom is not a once-a-week habit. It's the discipline of a lifetime. It's the discipline of a lifetime of not only accumulating wisdom, but following it, understanding it, protecting it, and employing it in your life. Every wise decision we make is one step toward building our lives on a firm foundation. Jesus compares the wise man to a man that builds his house on a rock. This shows that biblical wisdom makes our lives stable. And honestly, that is the only stable choice that we have. We may not see immediate results, but think of it like building a house. Because again, once you find out that this is going to have a price to it, once you realize it's a process, here's what's going to happen. You're going to try wisdom for a little bit. Even if this series does anything to get you started, this message gets anything to get you the ball rolling on your pursuit of wisdom, you're going to start, and then you're going to go, man, this takes a whole lot longer than I expected. Might as well forget it. Look, if we started building this structure and we just poured the foundation, we realized how long that would take, and we call it quits, have we succeeded? No. Okay, what about when we drove the first screw into the first board? And we realized, all right, we're done now. No. Wisdom is much the same way. It takes one small thing at a time. Driving one board into another, finally we have the structure in place after several months. Wisdom is an accumulated building of knowledge, understanding, and application. Information, integration, and application in our lives. And anything we do that makes our project look more like a structure gives hope. So keep building. Look back at your life. Look at how God has changed you since 2020 began. Look what he's done this year in your life. Look, wisdom is a process, but trust me, wisdom is worth the work. Anything worth having is worth working for. That's a lesson my dad taught me when I was a kid, and it has not led me astray. Anything worth having is worth working for. Are you working for wisdom? Are you just letting foolishness have its way with you? We're in this book of Proverbs, and we're going to take a break. Next week, we have a guest speaker. Then we have, I don't know if you've heard of it, this thing called Easter. Yeah, it's coming up. We have Palm Sunday, Good Friday, Easter Sunday, and then after that, we're going to be back at the book of Proverbs. That gives us about a month. You have 28 days starting today. There are 31 Proverbs. I'm going to challenge you with something. Read a proverb a day between today and the next Sunday that we're in this. And you'll only have three left to go. Gesundheit. We'll only have three chapters left to go if you do that starting today. So when you go home, read a chapter of Proverbs. Look for these themes while you're doing it. Look for the themes of the pursuit of wisdom and its value. The protection of wisdom and why it protects you, how it protects you, what it's protecting you from. Look for the price of wisdom. What's it going to cost you? What's it going to give you? And finally, look at the process of wisdom. How do we get there? Where does it all go? What steps are we taking in wisdom through this book? Now, I have to give you a warning. That after the break, the first Sunday that we're back, we're going to be dealing with a delicate subject of sex and pornography. Look, this was not me that decided this one. It's in the book of Proverbs, so we have to deal with it. And in fact, it is one of the main themes, one of the main pictures for a reason. That it is one of the biggest symptoms of the foolishness of a culture when we are bound up in sensuality rather than spiritual wisdom. So we're going to be dealing with that one. So younger ears, perhaps not the best place for them, unless you really want to get them some education. But we're going to be dealing with those things. I apologize in advance. Some of you parents are now going to have to explain what those words mean. So I apologize, but I want to give you that warning that on the first Sunday of April, that's where we're going to be. And once you start reading through the book of Proverbs, I hope you understand why. You understand why this is so significant. So, as we close, over the next month, read the book of Proverbs. It's that simple. Start there, looking for these themes and applying it to your life. As we close, we're gonna sing a hymn, Savior Like a Shepherd Lead Us. You know, sheep are stupid. Sheep are foolish. But a sheep can seem really smart. Why? Because it sticks with a shepherd. It stays away from those cliffs. It follows the right path. It stays away from the threats. With the shepherd, if you are staying close to him, the sheep is protected. It costs a price. It doesn't, might not get that lush grass over on that hill over there, but you know what? It's going to be safe. It's going to be protected. And in the long run, in that process, in that journey, the sheep will finally be able to fulfill its purpose. It is much the same for us. God calls us to wisdom, not for his benefit, but for our own. So as we sing, Savior, like a shepherd, lead us. This is a commitment on our part that we want to follow him in the way. Wherever your path leads you this week, in all your ways, in all your paths, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. As you go, go in the way of wisdom.